Today on Movie World, as we talk about One Night Only, The End of Oak Street, and Spider-Man Brand New Day. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, me as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Hello. So now we don't know what we're dancing to. We dance when you introduce, but you sneak different theme tunes
but
at
only
the end.
Back. Yeah, at the right. Back. Yes.
So I think you need to address that.
Let's rewind.
Because it hasn't gone unnoticed, Joe.
Let's rewind a bit. Yes, so what Rashmi is referring to here is the last couple of episodes of Movie Wallers have had...
If you stay till the end.
Had a different finishing theme. Yeah, I've been messing around with AI music.
Joe has always been an amazing creator of music.
Correct.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been messing around with AI music, which is completely different. So... normally with music, I have lots of ideas and no talent. So I mess around with instruments. Well, I'm not as good as I would like to be. In my head, I've got all these skills I don't have. But AI music is fantastic. So anyone that's used like an LLM like ChatGPT, right? We've seen what it can do with prose. AI music is kind of the same thing for music. Mm-hmm. You can express a musical idea, excuse me, either through a prompt or through playing an instrument.
No, this is what I keep saying to Joe is you can, we yeah. can't. Yeah. But,
well,
okay.
One can.
Yes.
And then it will create music for you. And then it's a little hard to finesse because like trying to get ChatGPT to express a specific paragraph of text, you'll never do that. It comes out differently every time. So It requires a lot of iteration and experimentation. But yeah, I've been messing around with our Movie Wars theme tune because... Episode 600 is coming up.
Yeah.
And I did say we would have a new theme tune.
Right.
So I think since episode 300, I've done a new one for 300, 400, and 500. So
right.
Now it's time for 600.
Right.
And I can level it up.
What's it going to be?
I can level it up.
Yeah. So we actually heard from one of our dear listeners, who is Michelle. Michelle, if you are listening. So I'm going to read out Michelle's note. She wanted to say, hi, I wanted to tell you that I love the singing at the end of the podcast. Who wrote the music and who sings it?
Writing's an interesting question. I expressed a musical idea into an AI music program that then expressed my idea as music.
Okay.
It has a singing voice.
Yes.
It has many singing voices.
Yes.
You can tell
that is the expression of your writing,
who to
that
sing,
voice.
How to sing,
right.
What
we had a
sing.
Great jazz type musician at the end of the last one, I think.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so now we had a female.
I'm having a lot of fun with this.
And the first one was more pop.
Yes. I'm the last couple were actually messing around with kind of you know, hip hop, jazz, funky, cool stuff. But anyway, I'm playing around with this stuff. It's so much fun. Yes, you expect to hear a lot more different iterations of Movie Wallace.
So it's worth staying till the end of every show because you just don't know what you're gonna get.
All right, but anyway.
Okay.
Are you promising a new one every episode, Joe?
Maybe theme related.
It's actually easy enough to do that. I'm not going to promise that because with like anything ChatGPT, AI related, not everything it produces is good.
Yeah.
A lot of it is actually bad.
Yeah.
I would say 80% of it is bad. 10% is okay and 10% is good. So that's the ratio. Anyway, we'll have fun.
Before we jump in, we have feedback from another one of our listeners, our dear friend Jeannie. And Jeannie responded to our podcast of The Odyssey. And she said, just listen to your review of The Odyssey.
A long review, The Odyssey.
That was like 40 minutes. Thank you, Jeannie, for making it all the way through.
Thank you for even listening to it, yeah.
She says, I have actually a random thought. I think I would have liked for Peter Jackson to do The Odyssey and in 2 to 3 episodes, similar to the approach he took with Lord of the Rings, which I actually think is a pretty good idea.
Great idea.
It is actually ripe material for a Jackson-style director to do.
Yeah.
I agree with the episodic. I don't agree fully, Jeannie, with the Nolan ousting in favor of Peter Jackson. Just because Peter Jackson, I feel like he's done his thing. Like,
yeah.
He has made his masterpiece.
Yeah.
I don't know that doing but it again. We all got tired of Hobbit iterations.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I think she means the approach. Yeah. Like
More monstery.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, right. I think the approach like didn't work. What worked so well for Lord of the Rings worked terribly for The Hobbit.
But I think that's the story.
And maybe that's the issue.
Maybe that's the issue. Anyway.
It's the talking dragon.
But I like the thought.
Yes.
But thank you, Jeannie. And we really appreciate you.
Your feedback.
We always love hearing back from quite people. So, yes. Jeannie, thank you for
and
that
And others,
comment.
Please write into us at mail.moviewallahs.com.
Yes.
mail@moviewallahs.com.
Heckle us.
Heckle us. Tell us if we're on the right
track. Actually, don't heckle us. I only want to hear... I'm kidding.
Heckled us.
Heckle us, hassle us, love us, hate us.
Give us feedback.
Feedback.
Yes.
Love to hear from you.
Okay, quick. Next segue.
Yes. So, even though we are going to do three movies today, because it's been a while, we're going to throw in very quickly a streaming pick.
Yes.
Recommendation in our segment. I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. So,
I'm going to go first.
All right.
Okay. So I am going to recommend. We are late to this party. This is based on a book. It is the show Margot's Got Money Troubles, starring the wonderful Elle Fanning, Michelle Pfeiffer, Nick Offerman, Greg Kinnear is here, and. This is wonderful. It's basically the daughter of a former Hooters waitress and an ex-pro wrestler. Margot is a recent college dropout and aspiring writer, faced with a new baby, mounting pile of bills, and dwindling number of ways to pay them. Margot must find a way forward. We are about halfway through the series. It's on Apple TV. That is my recommendation. Margot's Got Money Troubles. Yes, Dee, what's yours?
My recommendation has to do with the one only... unique director Pedro Almodovar, whose new movie Bitter Christmas is coming out later this year. But the one I'm going to recommend is his previous film, which just landed on Netflix. It was a movie which was released late 2025, and it's a movie called The Room Next Door. The Room Next Door. And
great
The
movie.
Room Next Door deals with all the big issues and handles it just like only like Almodovar can. It's got Julianne Moore and Tilda Swinton. It's pretty much a two-hander, but the movie has commentary about, you know, life and death and dignity and dying and, you know, the current military status in, you know, of the world, and it's shot in a beautiful locations as only Almodovar can. If you love movies about just two actors doing their job, you need to watch The Room Next Door, which is streaming on Netflix.
And it's got stunning cinematography, if I ever saw it. I think
the visuals
you and I did a review of this one. Like, I think it came out end of 2023.
Maybe
2023, 2024. Joe, we can probably reference which podcast it's in. And do a link back to our original review.
Google it and
I will put it in. Okay, Joe, what's your recommendation?
Real quick, on Apple TV, no longer Apple TV Plus, it's Apple TV only. If you have subscription to Apple TV, you will see that they have done a pickleball movie. Now, if we have spoken about pickleball many a times on this show, and if you live within driving distance of La Jolla, California, you are welcome to our open pickleball 9:30 a.m. on a Saturday morning. You have to know where it is. But we play pickleball regularly.
Every Saturday.
We have a lot of fun with it. And so when this movie popped up called The Dink, The Dink is the name of a shot that you play in pickleball, we had to check it out.
Yep.
The movie stars Jake Johnson, not Johnston, Mary Steenburgen, Ed Harris, Ben Stiller makes a little...
There are lots of little cameos. Fortune Feemeister, Jim McGaffin, a few little pop-ups here and there.
It is a fun little movie. Now, I'm not going to say that this is high art. It's a comedy movie set around pickleball. Pickleballers may actually take offense of it because it does, in many ways, play up to the stereotype of pickleball, which is aging people running around in sweats playing the game. But it's a delightful little comedy. And for a comedy to work, it has to be funny. That's the only thing that a comedy has to do. It doesn't offend anyone. I've just said it. It may offend pickleball players in the sense of it lampoons the sport a little bit in terms of the demographic that plays it. But it's a delightful little comedy, very warm of heart, genuinely funny one-liners.
Very, very funny.
A completely ridiculously predictable story. I mean, I predicted the final scene maybe like two-thirds of the way through as like beat for beat. I was like, this is what's going to happen. Doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters. The movie is fun.
Yeah.
75% on the Tomatometer, 59% from audience, and I think some of the audience negativity there may be pickleballers saying, don't depict me as a 70-year-old running around in sweatpants. But it's super fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. We watched it on a Friday night, and as soon as it finished, Joe said this was the perfect Friday night movie, which it was.
So
it was great. It's super fun.
Rashmi, silly. Your movie was...
It's not movie, it's a series. It is Margot's Got Money Troubles on Apple TV.
Yes, and by the way, that's based on a very famous book, correct, which I've been told is also worth reading.
Okay,
for what it's good. Worth. Okay, our book club recommended it. Okay, my recommendation is The Room Next Door on Netflix. Just watch it.
It's fantastic.
And if you are scratching around for a movie that's not difficult to watch on a Friday night that will leave you with a smile on your face, select The Dink, D-I-N-K.
And we have one bonus pick from again, Michelle very kindly wrote in and said, if you love Nancy Drew's Kids or Hardy Boys, A Good Girl Guide to Murder is binge-worthy. It's playing on Netflix. So thank you for that, Michelle.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, a bonus pick.
Well, we have to watch it.
Yeah, we have to watch it now.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Yes, thank you for the recommendation.
Okay, let's move on to business.
Yes.
We have One Night Only. We have The End of Oak Street, and we have Spider-Man A Brand New Day. We are going to tackle them in that order, beginning with One Night Only. Rashmi.
Yes, so I'm going to give you the IMDb description of this. Directed by Will Gluck, who's written things like Peter Rabbit, and he's done, just to give you a sense, Anyone But You, Friends With Benefits. He's done Easy A, big CV there, big resume. Written by Travis Braun, and it stars Callum Turner, who is the husband of Dua Lipa, and Tion Chambers, Grace Dumdor. Two New Yorkers search for love on the one night of the year when premarital sex is legal. So this is a fictional New York City where premarital sex or any PDA is forbidden other than one night. So
can I just take a moment to say an absolutely absurd premise?
Yes. Yes.
With no explanation in the movie.
Didn't need to.
Or very little explanation. I think there's didn't some background it. Nuggets, but yeah. I just want to say that up front because
it is an introduction absurd.
Begs explanation, and I feel like...
A sexplanation. Did you mean that?
There you go. It does beg both a sexplanation and an explanation.
Yes.
So.
Okay, so who wants to go first? Joe, why don't you go first?
Okay, absurd premise.
Seeing as you were on a roll.
Well, I wasn't ready to make my comments. But
I can.
Okay. So, look, I mean... This is a romantic comedy. It's got a very simple premise and it's a very absurd setup with respect to this dystopian scenario where people who are single may not engage in sexual activity with a member,
anyone.
With anyone.
Yeah.
Except for one night a year. The one night a year, they can go crazy, sleep with anyone they want.
And if you're married or otherwise engaged, you can have all the sex you want. Just to be clear, yes.
Correct,
yes.
Correct. So this is an absurd premise, but that's the premise that we're dealt, and that's the movie's world. And that's the rules that are set up, and that's the rules that these characters must follow. So the movie follows these guys through. Look, Rashmi's given enough, I think, about the background here. Did I like it or not? Yes, I did. And a romantic comedy... This is a very easy movie to pick holes in, and I think if I was in a different mood, I'd be like, I want to know what's going on. Why can't they? And where are these rules? And who set this up? And why can't they rebel against it? And what none of that matters. This is a romantic comedy with great chemistry between the two leads. I was smiling all the way through. I think the will they won't they aspect of it was done really well because they had so many barriers to their potential getting together. And you know that they're the two leads. You must, you know where this movie has to go. And yet it kind of threw me off the scent in many places. So look, rom-com, smiles, fun. People have whipped this movie critically. I thought it was lovely.
Okay. Yes, D. The rom-com super fan.
I love a good rom-com. I think if you're looking for a rom-com, back of a plane, Friday evening, you could do far worse. Mm-hmm. I have some major bones to pick with the movie, but I think there is one and only one and only one reason to watch the movie, and that is Monica Barbaro.
Who plays, and I forgot to mention she's in the movie.
Yeah, she's the female lead.
Yes.
If you saw Complete Unknown about Bob Dylan, she played Joan Baez in that film. That was the first time I saw her. She's a very accomplished singer of her own, and in this movie she plays kind of a person who's making a living by making jingles out of popular songs.
Yes.
But she, and you know, she's, I don't know, she's forced to wear this dress, which is so
ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous through the whole movie. I mean, she's barely contained within that dress. And
there's not much to contain.
But that set aside, I think for me, she was entirely endearing. I believed everything she said. I believed the place she was in and all of that. My bone to pick is with the premise itself, and we can discuss more about it. I mean, it's absurd, but beyond being as absurd, I think I have a few other thoughts.
Rashmi. Yeah. In order to be a good romantic comedy, you need to be romantic. You need to be funny. And this is both of those. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. But I could live with the premise that, I mean, literally, I've written down two words in my notes. It says funny premise. That's all I wrote. And that's a reflection of how engaged I was with the movie the entire time. It was so fun. It was just silly. It's a very stylish movie. Mm-hmm. And I love that it's set in New York in one evening. Yeah. It's literally the whole movie takes place in a 24-hour kind of ish period. And it's really just following these two people around as they kind of miss each other and bump into each other, miss each other and bump into each other. And I think the getting to the end that you were saying, Joe, which inevitably has to happen, it was a fun ride. So I really, really enjoyed this movie. Huge smile on my face. I thought it was funny.
So let me read the critic consensus to open up the debate that I think Yazdi is going to have here. The critic consensus on Rotten Tomatoes is hampered by high concept premise that's full of red flags. One Night Only has charming moments thanks to its appealing stars, but keeps killing the mood with world building that prompts more questions than the script is willing to answer. That is 100% true.
Yes. Yeah.
That is a really brilliant, true statement. I think that's where your problems lie.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with an absurd premise, right? God knows every one every one of Lanthimos' movies is a completely absurd premise, right? But my issue with this thing is, and I'm not going to take credit for it. The folks at the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast have said this, that you don't need this premise, right? This whole movie could have been about two people looking for love one evening in New York City, and they keep bumping into each other. So that premise kind of just hangs there, just like the summary here. And ordinarily, I wouldn't have an issue with it, but the premise is kind of, you know, The Purge meets, American Pie. I don't know. The Purge meets sex, right? It's the one night of the day when singles can have sex. But here's the thing. Where is that premise coming from, right? I think it's a critique of far-right political beliefs that people should not, young people should not have sex until they get married. And I think, there is kind of a precedent you see for a few minutes. So it's the logical extension of, you know, if you allowed very, very conservative belief in the U.S. at some point, you know, premarital sex would be outlawed. So for me, that's the whole basis of the movie, but the movie doesn't do anything with it because it's too scared to say anything political. So it just kind of uses this as kind of a vague idea. It is kind of cute, but I think there is a much edgier, more politically forthright version of the script, which has just been buffed and edged off to kind of make it cute. So it felt like a lost opportunity to me.
True. I get what you're saying, but I actually like that it wasn't a political movie. And I think that we are too sophisticated an audience these days to believe that two people would just be looking for sex on one night in New York. So I think you have to
add... It's every Friday in New
York. I know, but what I'm saying is that the fact that it kind of raises the stakes that you have to either do it on that day or you're not going to be able to do it for a whole year, right?
Right,
so
right.
The act, I mean. So, right. And I think the way it's... I think it's gutsy in the way that it... There are some kind of... Being the frump of our group, being the Puritan of our group, there are some quite fruity scenes going on and fruity, scenes that were shown, right. Which are funny. They play really funny to me. So I could live with that.
Yeah.
But it's stupid. It is stupid. It's a stupid premise. But again, I don't know that we would be... They trusted us enough as an audience to be able to go with it if it wasn't that and the stakes weren't so high.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I responded as well to this movie as I did. I think the premise actually kind of hooked me.
Yeah.
Right? I thought that was kind of engaging. I was like, this is a really interesting...
Concept.
Plot device.
Yeah.
Not so much in that it's an interesting concept, because the concept's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that could ever be a real thing. You know, and they have these little pseudo sci-fi moments.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, how it's all controlled. You know, that's just excuses to back
right.
up the premise, right?
Yeah.
Like, so they don't really go there. But again, I think the thing for me is exactly what you said, which is it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
when you have great chemistry. And I think
yeah.
I keep talking about the chemistry. I don't think Callum Turner, is that his name? I don't think he's that good an actor.
No, he's not.
No, he's not.
And he's British and he's putting on
But
American
I loved him
accent.
In this.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
He's very adequate.
I didn't buy his lines at all.
Yeah, they're very hammy.
He has this, you know, boyish charm that...
Very low-keel charm, like...
Yeah, yeah. I was like... And the way his character is written... You know, so, I think the two of them coming together in the way that they do and the will they, won't they, and all of the nonsense that happens around them, which is very funny. Rashmi, you talked about, you know, some edgy moments. I mean, there are real edgy moments. There's some moments of that are quite biting.
Footy.
That I also thought were unnecessary to the plot. Mm. Like Yazdi,
But they're funny. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's
all played for laughs.
There's multiple versions of this movie that, you're right, could have existed. You could take out the premise. You could take out the spice. You could, you know, buff it all off and still keep it to be what it is. But yeah, I had fun with it.
Yeah. Anything more to say on this one?
No, I mean, I also think the movie, it's trying to be, it's you know, this whole premise is ridiculous. It's kind of pushing it. It's very sophisticated. It's very beautifully lit. It's kind of a New York which only exists in your dreams.
Beautifully shot.
It's beautifully
shot. Yeah, beautifully shot.
And like you, Rashmi, I wrote in my notes as well that I love movies which just play out over one night or one 24-hour period. So I really like that. My only thing is at the end, and I'm not going to give anything away, at the end, how it plays out, it kind of is a little square about its sensibility.
It is.
It is. It's very square. And I'm like, you are setting up this whole premise, and then it turns out like you literally don't want to go all the way. So anyway.
It's like a teenager wrote it and then realized their parents were going to read it.
Correct. Yes.
They scratched out the last paragraph.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
Right. But okay, let me rate this movie. It sounds like I'm complaining, right? I'm complaining because my search for something as good as Notting Hill continues. I love rom-com. This is not Notting Hill, but it's damn good. It doesn't matter what the premise is. It doesn't matter, you know, all these things are minor. I think these two people have genuine chemistry. And for me, if you're a Hollywood filmmaker, whoever, I think you should definitely hire Monica Barbaro to play the female lead.
She's
this is
great.
Her first time, and she's so good, and she's endearing and lovable. And I was with her the whole movie. And that, for me, is more than enough. Anemic 7.5 out of 10.
Which you will.
Which I'll back down to a 7. It's not quite an 8 rom-com.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I think I've said enough that hopefully you have the idea that I really like this movie. And I think, you know, its greatest compliment in some ways is that I really wanted these two to find their way to each other.
Yeah.
All throughout the movie, I was like, come on, let's make this happen. So I think as a rom-com, that's That's all you need. 7 out of 10.
Same score, 7 out of 10. One night only. Yeah, I think you'll be watching it again, actually. If it came on the TV, I would probably watch it on repeat.
It's for sure.
Highly watchable.
Yeah, and it's...
I feel sorry for the dress. I mean, the dress code was awful for her. I felt every outfit was like lingerie minus...
Another reason I like the movie.
I also think the dialogue is very, very good, right? Especially the dialogue between her and her roommate.
Yes.
It's so well done.
It's funny.
And then there's a whole thing about her... Well, he lands up with someone else. She lands up with someone else during the course of this thing. The whole part of her landing up with this musician, I think, is also played for a lot of laughs. I really enjoyed
that. And the little kid that's being babysat on the night. Like,
correct.
It's got, it's funnier than it needs to be. It's actually got quite, and it's an R. It's a hard R.
It's
an,
yeah.
It's, it earns its R.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of movies that earn their R, let's talk about The End of Oak Street.
Good segue. But it's not an R.
It's not an R. It's a PG-13, which I'm surprised by. We'll talk about it more.
This my jaw just fell to my jaw.
Mine too.
Right. How this movie is PG-13, I don't know. The End of Oak Street, 1 hour and 39 minutes, written and directed by David Robert Mitchell. David Robert Mitchell kind of has made a lot of movies, but he broke into the scene with the movie It Follows, which a lot of people believe to be one of the better horror films of the last decade. And he kind of takes on this movie, which many consider at league with Jurassic Park. So that's quite a huge jump from a you know, writer director of a small horror film. The one sentence IMDb summary for the movie is: the Platt family bands together to navigate their new surroundings after a cosmic event transports their suburban neighborhood to someplace unknown. That is very vague, but we'll get to that. This is the fifth movie that Anne Hathaway is in this year. She has a sixth one coming out in October.
She is working.
What was it? The Verity?
Verity. Verity is the sixth one. But yes. She's been in, this is her fifth movie. And the movie stars her in the lead role, along with Ewan McGregor as her harried husband. Maisie Stella, who we last saw in My Old Ass. I think that was the movie, My Old Ass.
Remember that was a great movie. Well, it was interesting.
It was interesting.
The was it that?
It was
Anna Kendrick.
It was,
the other one.
The other one.
Oh, I'll find it.
Aubrey Plaza movie. So Maisie Stella is in it, as is Christian Convery, Jordan Alexa Davis, PJ Byrne, etc. Before we all discuss this movie, I should say I'm really surprised by the response to this movie. It seems to fall in two categories. There are people who think this is like amazing and Warner Brothers really effed up and they should have released this movie on, you know, July 4th. And then there are other people who are like, it's okay. So it seems to be in one of those two camps. So I'm curious to know, where do you guys fall?
Okay.
Do you think this is going to save cinema? So a lot of people think it will.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so I will give you the comment that I told the rep as I walked out, which is, it is hammy, underwritten, but really entertaining. This is Jurassic Park in suburbia. It's a really, really silly idea. It's, again, another really ridiculous premise, but the effects are really good. It's an interesting story. But not much happens. I wish it was a bit more overwritten. And I think the problem I have with it, which we can talk about, is it didn't commit to being either a horror or being just an action movie. It's trying to do both at times, and it didn't do either very well. It didn't really commit to one of those. So again, hammy, underwritten, but really, really entertaining.
Sure.
I mean, like, just like the last movie, right? It has a premise that defies explanation and is just created to... basically put the characters in the situation. Look,
extraordinary things happening to ordinary people.
I really enjoyed this movie. I had no expectations going into it. Mm-hmm. I love, and it took me a while to kind of tune in, and I say a while, like the first 5 minutes I was trying to scratch my head over,
where is this going?
Where is this going? Where, what is this about? And why does it feel so Spielbergian?
Like, yes.
And why does it feel so like Amblin Entertainment? Which I yes. think I just saw that word on the Rotten Tomatoes page and I looked it up. I'm like, oh yeah, that's
very deliberate. This movie, but I forgot to mention, is produced by J.J. Abrams.
So it, and oh, I was that's just right. Say, yes, yeah. Yes.
That's the movie that it reminded me of at the beginning was Super 8. Now,
correct.
None of this is a bad thing. It's just right. it didn't advertise it that. Self that way to me until like a few minutes in, and I was like, oh, okay. Which then, when things start to happen, made me realize, yeah, this is the world in which we're playing, and you know, all of its moments work really well. Yes, they're. I know why you're saying underwritten, Rashmi, because it doesn't earn some of its moments yeah. before they happen, right? Yeah. They just like, bang. But then I loved like the genuine jeopardy and peril that everyone is in, yeah. especially later on in the movie where you suddenly realize that it doesn't matter who you are in Hollywood, you aren't safe in this movie.
Right.
And that's fun when that happens because yeah. oftentimes yeah. in yeah. big budget expensive movies,
yeah.
You know, people...
Stay.
People have to be there for the full running time. Yeah. That's not the case here.
Yeah.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah. Yasti, initial thoughts.
Yeah, so I really don't know what to think about this movie. Like you, I absolutely, completely enjoyed it. Like in the moment, I was giggling like a schoolgirl, right? In fact, there are parts of this movie which are so stupid or inane, for lack of a better word, where I'm like, no, nobody's this stupid. Right. Like, why are you doing this, right? Like your neighborhood is being overrun by, you know,
dinosaurs.
Angry, hungry dinosaurs. Yeah. And you go out to look for your dog. And then if your sister goes out to look for your dog and you follow the sister, like, how stupid are these people?
Don't go into the cellar.
Don't go into the cellar. But at the same time, I think the movie is trying to kind of reclaim that Amblin kind of universe.
Nostalgia.
I mean, it's even said, it took me a long time to figure out because the production design seemed to make it think it was set in the 60s, but it turns out it's actually set in the early 80s. So it took me a long time to figure that out, and it makes sense with the plot because if you had cell phones, none of this plot would happen. So it took me a while to figure
because you could Google your way out.
Yes. No, I don't. Chat GPT. What do I do with a dinosaur?
There's a major plot point about warning people ahead of time, right?
Sure.
Anyway, it's entertaining. I mean, there's one scene in the movie, and I know, okay, my summary is I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's as good as Jurassic Park, which a lot of people are claiming. Like, this is the perfect film, and it's like a, you know, 100%, you know, the best time you can have this year at the cinemas, which I don't think it is.
I do agree that it feels like it's come a little late for summer. Mm-hmm. I do agree that this would have been a great July 4th opening, but it's not sold as that, which is what Joe said. So I agree with exactly what you both are saying. Like, it needs more fanfare, but I think they were scared to have fanfare because they're scared that we're going to realize it's Jurassic Park in suburbia. And that's okay. It's okay to be that movie. But I think they didn't want to put like big adverts out on it in a way. And so it's kind of undersold.
Yeah, I also think when you... Not that this director cannot write and direct other things, but it's very difficult for somebody who is at heart a horror filmmaker to make a movie about childhood nostalgia, because I think it's funny and it's kind of, you know, going back to that time, but in its visuals and in its plot, it's extremely gory. And I think I'm shocked this movie is PG-13. It should be a full out R. But that aside, I think there are scenes in this where I was scared. I was properly scared. And I think if I was a 11 or 12 year old watching this, I would have nightmares. So, because these are not nice, cuddly dinosaurs. Like, they're very feathery. They're like very bird-like. They're mean dinosaurs.
And they're indiscriminate.
Yes, they're indiscriminate. They're just hungry.
There is peril.
Right.
Yeah.
At every moment of this movie.
Yeah.
And I think the way that it sustains that peril, without giving us a lot of breather, especially during its, like, you know, late act two into act three type moments, is remarkable.
I mean,
it was like relentlessly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it vicious. Does it with volume, yeah. right? Like the horror-esque comes from the volume of animals there are that you're attacking fighting you. Off. But again, I wish it had gone more. Like I wanted more of the horror. I just feel right. like it didn't commit.
But then it couldn't be a PG-13. I mean, I still don't. Yeah, yeah. I also think there is a meanness about the movie, right? So there is a
yeah.
There's a like.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's when bad things happen, like they're really bad things that are happening. Yeah. They're not like, you know, somebody gets a scratch or, you know, somebody's arm is eaten. In a cast. Yeah, you get eaten. And so, yeah. So I was struggling a little bit with the tone.
And I guess I was kind of like, I didn't buy into when the event has happened. There seem to be no people about, you know, there are loud noises happening. You know, yeah. I guess now they didn't have group chat where you could go on next door and say, hey, did anyone hear that loud noise down the canyon? But still, you would think that there would be a bit more commotion and neighbors running out of their house. So I found it a little bit strange that it feels very isolating for this particular family. And I would have thought there would have been a bit more like, I couldn't buy into the reality of it. Like, I wish there'd been a bit more like, oh my God, there's a big disaster going on and now people are going to group together and it's a film about humanity saving each other. But maybe it wasn't that movie.
And I kind of accepted that because we were focused only on one family and the relationships that they had. Like additional chaos in the world, I don't know, would have helped tell that story a little better. And, you know, maybe it was too tricky to do. I mean, we had what we needed, which was, you know, there was a beautiful show don't tell moment of, you know, a neighbor driving to work and then
suddenly driving back
from work.
Yeah.
You know, in the next incident. And so again, I think these are deliberate moments of directorial writing choice. But I mean, look, again, this is one of those things where if you go in and you start asking these questions,
exactly.
Just leave and go home and watch something else. Yeah. This movie isn't for you because, like our last movie, One Night Only, you kind of just have to accept that this is the premise. And, you know, I mean, Jurassic Park was fantastical. Yes, it had some pseudoscience kind of, you know, explaining the reason that we have dinosaurs in this captivity. You know, E.T., we have to accept that there's a space alien that a child is friends with and can make bicycles fly. So, you know, this is one of those movies where I'm going to kind of defend the absurdity simply because...
You liked it.
Well, because it doesn't... Not everything needs an owner's manual.
No, and
right?
I don't.
Not
think,
everything needs.
And that's not. No, and I'm not even. I'm not even.
And I'm
arguing.
The one normally searching for that.
Right.
I am normally the one searching for that. But what I've come to realize here is that I think when the story is told in the way that it's told, and we care enough about the characters, that these things, are, you know, there was an interview with Chris Nolan where he talks about film criticism. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was very recent, and he's saying, you know, a lot of, you know, YouTube and amateur film criticism often picks apart plot devices. And it's like, well, if you pick apart plot devices, you know, every movie has to have plot devices. Movie has to have these things that set up the situations. But that's, you know, so if that's what you're going to poke, you know, it's not how well the director hides them. It's how the movie makes you feel.
Exactly.
Right? So I think that he's defending his filmmaking there. I'm not going to defend that. But it made me think about the way I ingest movies like this, where I'm like, I would normally be like, well, what happened and how did it happen and what's
and I wasn't even talking about that piece. What I'm saying is the believability of when the event has happened, and I compare it to something like that great movie, which I love, called Don't Look Up, which was, you know, about the end of the world. And so it's about how people react in the world that's been created. That's all I'm saying is that that piece of the... You have to accept every plot for what it is, right? The world it's created. I'm talking about once you're in there and you've believed the world you're in, people don't behave like they would in that world that they've created. That's all. Yeah. So I'm just saying something like Don't Look Up did end of the world or disaster so well that it's kind of become my yardstick for other movies.
Yeah. That's the one with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and Leonardo and Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, great movie.
My point is not that I need to argue with Christopher Nolan, but my point is it depends on the film, right?
Yeah.
Some movies truly... The plot is like airtight, right? You go back and rewatch it and every little piece clicks into each other. But I don't expect that from a popcorn film. This is completely 200% a popcorn film, and I expect it to have holes in its plot. Its chief objective is to entertain me. So mission accomplished.
Yeah.
My thing is, I like to what you were saying, Rashmi, where within the confines of the observed plot, does it still work? Are the people
That's
reacting?
It.
Like again, I hate to keep going back to Yorgos Lanthimos. The premises in his films are absurd, but within those premises, everything works perfectly. There is a scene in this movie where everybody is like, they're all doing something. They're kind of trying to get something done. Everybody's in there. Ewan McGregor, Anne Hathaway, the kids, they're all there. And this giant dinosaur comes at them and he's plodding away at them. And the dinosaur is like a foot away before they even realize he's there. I was laughing because it was so improbable. If a dinosaur the size of a two-story building is coming at you, you should be hearing the thunder. You should be, you know, you shouldn't realize it's like when it's a feet away from you. So I think there was some inconsistency there, some lack of believability. But again, we're splitting hairs. This movie wants to entertain you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, scores.
Sure. I mean, look, it was fun. It was entertaining. Is it? I don't know that it's the second coming. I mean, I don't know what people are talking about if they think that this is the movie to save movies. That's nonsense to me. But is this a good, fun movie? I mean, you know, yeah. It's from the director of the movie It Follows. And if you watched It Follows, that has a plot device where this thing is always walking towards the camera. It's an entertaining horror film, and this is kind of an entertaining action thriller adventure. And I loved its Amblin, J.J. Abrams, Steven Spielberg type feel. That set me up for what it was going to be. If it started any other way, I think I might have been more annoyed.
Score?
8. Sorry.
Oh, nice. Yazdi. Okay.
I love that Anne Hathaway is in here because she acts her little heart out.
Yeah, she really does.
There's a whole subplot about her and her husband, played by Ewan McGregor, and they're falling apart, and they really invest so much gravity to this movie.
They really do.
Which does not want to at all. So I really like that. I also think you see dinosaurs here.
It's like thorn birds, like a sub-thorn bird.
But you see dinosaurs, you're pooping. You see dinosaurs doing far worse things. And I'm like, this cannot be PG-13. But go explain it. It's PG-13. Extremely entertaining. I was laughing. I was even laughing in places which were very serious.
Yeah. Because we were uncomfortable.
Was it uncomfortable? I just thought I was laughing because of the absurdity of it as well. But
no, I think it's because we were scared.
Maybe, yeah. And again, don't. I don't know. If you know your kids well, I don't think an 8 or a 9 year old should be
I would not
this.
Take, yes. Yeah.
7.5 out of 10, which I'm going to bump up to 8 because it's so harmless. It's so well-meaning. It wants to kind of, you know, please you. And then it does this whole thing at the end about it plays with time in kind of a nice way. And yeah, I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
You know what? I think I'm going to give it an 8 as well because it is so nostalgic of the movies from the 80s. And I loved hearing some of the music from the 80s and seeing things that we did in the 80s, like have a Walkman. I mean, there are some really good throwbacks in here.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor needs to do a better job acting. I don't know what's happened to him.
Yeah, he's a little stiff.
He needs to take that pull from up him out a bit more, I think. Yeah, huh? I think this is again so underwritten, but it's a fun time at the movies. Go see this at the theater. Go enjoy this in a theater where it's loud.
And just like the previous movie, I also think this movie is very square in terms of how it all ends. It's like, oh, you never really recognized how good your father
was. But that's
that's so like, you know, that's so 1972.
Exactly. But it's nice.
So I don't begrudge it. But it is very square. It's like, you know, you harping wife, you were like unnecessarily not valuing your beautiful husband, you know, kind of, your courageous husband. So Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's good.
Who tries to provide.
Right, who tries to provide.
How dare you have a career or think about having one.
Yes, how dare you type up a book. Anyway, okay.
Joe, how do you feel about that one?
How dare you type up a book.
Exactly. All right.
Spider-Man.
Okay, and we've got to be quick with this one because we do have a curfew with this one. Okay, so number four of this iteration of Spider-Man, A Brand New Day, directed by our dear friend Yazdi, yes. Mr. Destin Daniel Cretton, who we knew from
Daniel Destin Cretton.
He's listed here as Destin Daniel on IMDb.
Okay.
So Mr. D.D. Cretton. Yes. Let's just call him that.
Yes,
who we had an opportunity to sit down and chat with, and he was lovely when he was a little director for that little short movie he did
called
Short Term 12 that became a big movie. And anyway, we reminisce, Yazdi.
Yes.
Okay, so this is directed by Destin Daniel Cretton. It stars the usual cast, including Tom Holland, Zendaya, whole bunch of others. A forgotten Peter Parker lives alone as a full-time Spider-Man until mounting pressure triggers a dangerous change and a powerful new enemy emerges. Do we have room in our hearts for a number four? And will there be a number five that you'd be excited about, Yazdi?
There will be a number five because this movie has already made the most money of any Marvel movie or some ridiculous. It's made a ton of money.
Gazillion-ish dollars.
People are saying the Odyssey and Spider-Man has, you know.
Spodyssey weekend.
Right. Has, revived Hollywood. It's made a ton of money, so I'm sure there'll be a number five. Look, I loved Daniel Destin Cretton. He last made Shang-Chi and the Magic Ten Rings. He clearly has a way with action, which I'd never, he made a very, very emotional movie that we all loved, Short Term 12.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that, I'm so happy for him. He's now probably the director who's made the most money for Marvel, which is a big deal. And I hope everybody's crawling for him to make
their
next
San Diegan.
Movie. Local San Diegan. So I'm very happy for him. I found the movie... Maybe it's just me because everybody else loves this movie. I don't hate this movie at all. I just found it. I had fatigue. I had fatigue. I'm like, oh my God, another story with the same three characters. So maybe I think that's more of a me problem. And I kind of was thinking about why do I have a dissonance from everybody else who seems to love this movie? And everybody does love this movie. And I think it's because the movie has a very melancholic tone to it. Mm-hmm. It's about essentially Peter Parker realizing that in order to save Mary Jane and his best friend, that he has to kind of...
He has to go
to an alternate reality or whatever it is where they don't remember him anymore. And so I think in a way, and maybe I'm giving this movie too much credit, it's about loneliness in men in the US, and he's lonely and he's miserable and he's like he cannot be with his friends who he really loves. So for me, this movie had a very kind of had a dark underbelly, and maybe that's what I think. I also didn't like the fact that you have all the money in the world, you have everything in front of you, and what do you do for a villain? The villain should be the best thing in a movie, right? In a superhero movie, the villain should be even better than the hero. And all you're doing is repackaging villains from other parts of the Marvel X-Men universe. So that was very, very, very disappointing to me. So I was like, okay, we are going to do this. So I'm sorry, I'm not the best audience member. I'm okay with it. I am glad for all of its success.
Joe.
Yeah, look, I mean, Rashmi and I did something that I think was really, really important to how I received this movie, which was the night before we went onto YouTube and we watched a recap of the story so far.
Okay.
I think without that, a lot of the emotional notes of this movie, I think, would not have hit because I didn't get from the beginning of the movie things that I knew were important to the plot. I was like, oh, I'm really glad we watched that recap. So, first of all, if you intend to watch this movie, please do yourself a favor. Unless you are a Marvel
or a Spider-Man
geek that's watched these things over and over and over, do that. Because we did that, this movie landed extremely well with me, I'll have to say. I mean, it avoids everything that Supergirl that we just saw got wrong. It's not crash bangy. The I mean, it has great action in it, but it's not that constant bang, bang, bang that we constantly see in these superhero movies. I think, you know, the action tends to serve the characters rather than being this kind of overwhelming, you know, noise explosion type stuff. The heart that this movie has, this is a very emotional movie for me. I mean, I was surprised at how well this movie landed. And I kind of hope that it is the end, but I mean, you know, of like the Tom Holland trilogy, because honestly, I think he's aging out of the role. Like, you know, we had the boyish Peter Parker, who's still a boyish Peter Parker, but in many ways, this Peter Parker is the maturation of that character. And you know, I kind of feel that story doesn't need any more. There's nowhere to go from here. But it landed really well with me. This is a great superhero movie.
I loved this movie. I'll tell you why I loved it, for many, many reasons. But one of the reasons I loved it is, in past times, we've watched Marvel movies and they're so complicated. Joe, you're right. Having watched the kind of summary that we did on YouTube, and maybe you can link that to the show notes. I don't know if that helped, but it felt like in other Marvel movies, there's always so many other characters popping in and popping out and things happening that you have to remember from past movies. You can actually, I think, watch this movie as it is, as a standalone. And I think it's a complete movie, and it has a really good arc from start to finish, if you think about the character's journey from where he starts to where he ends. And then I love the crossover with the villain. Yazdi, I completely disagree with you about the villain. I think this type of villain is wonderful, because all good villains come from somewhere, right? They are villainesque,
but they have.
No, they're not. She's not recycled. So I think the issue is that she has a good villain has a story that we can all connect to, right? That's what makes a good villain a really, really good villain. And it was the same thing in Spider-Verse, the cartoon version that we had. That's why I love this villain. So I will disagree with you on that one. So I love this, and I love the connection to another Marvel franchise. If you were watching and you are a fan. Right. Okay, so having said that, I like it because this is a standalone movie. It seems quite simple in its premise, right? It's Peter Parker trying to get back home in a way. And I love the loneliness, the sacrifice. I love the subplot with the John Bernthal character. Like, it's got a good B plot going on in here that you can follow along to. I love the technology that they're using in this movie as well, like all the technology and how it's all integrated. I just love this movie. This really worked for me.
Yeah, good. For me, it's... I think that they could have kept that villain without using that name, right? And it would have worked. Why use that name?
Well, because I think it's might be to something that's coming.
I think
but we've seen that in three other Marvel movies, that I character, or more than that. We've seen that character in five other Marvel movies. You're having a different actor play it, and just don't give it that name. That the character of the villain could have just existed on its own. And you can provide the backstory.
This.
Yes.
I don't think it mattered.
Yeah, I don't think it mattered either.
I'm not trying to dismiss what you're saying, and I'm not trying to dismiss what Rashmi's saying. Oh. I'm just trying to say that the movie, I think, was more about what you said at the beginning, which was this character's longingness for the life that he had to have, that he once had. And, you know, his journey was kind of coming to terms with that, which I think he does at the end of the movie, right? That to me was the emotional arc of the movie. The villain stuff is like, whatever. right? You have to have it. It's a Superman. Yeah. It's a superhero movie. You have to have antagonists and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that the hero's journey piece of this follows that at all. That's just background. I think this movie, that's why I found it surprisingly, like, I was, I won't say I was choking up, but I was more emotional than I felt for a long time in a movie of this nature.
Well, because in a way it's speaking to, we've all had, or some of us have had friends, we've all had friends who, who, you know, they outgrow the friendship and they're doing their own thing, right? So in this case, Peter is like looking out to the two people who mean the most to him, MJ and Ned, and the fact that they don't even know that he exists is so hard for him to take. And I think, that's very, very relatable.
Yeah,
and I think it's also, just to add, and is, you know, it's like, who are you? How meaningful is life if you have to live it alone, even though you're doing good things every day? Right. It's more about the love for the people around you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I can start. I'm going to give this a 9 out of 10. Love this movie. I love this movie. Great music, great acting, great production, great directing. Love it. Love the message. Yes, D.
A 7 out of 10 for me. Maybe I'm just suffering from superhero fatigue. But I mean, like I said at the outset, there's nothing wrong with this movie. It just felt, maybe I should just shut up. Because all the superhero people are going to come with tortures at me. But
no,
I
was just valid. I think it's valid.
Right. And I think, yeah.
Joe?
I'm in the middle. I feel really stingy giving it an 8 because it is so polished.
Yeah.
Like, you know, again, it's 2.5 hours long, maybe almost 3 hours. It's a 2.5 hours.
And I didn't want it to end.
And I did not feel a minute of that. Like, I was just with it its entire running time. So, you know, props to how well written, directed and acted this was, right? Yeah. Those are the three things that we look for.
Yeah.
And it checks all of those boxes. So I do feel stingy giving it an 8.
Give it a 9.
No. The only reason I won't give it a 9 is I don't think that it's done anything that we haven't yet seen in the superhero genre. It doesn't seem to do anything new. It just does what it does exceptionally well. And
it's way more focused, which I loved.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, and that I love. The simplicity... And the focus was just incredible.
Yeah.
So 8.
Yeah. 8.
7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
That's pretty good scoring.
And look, I think I'm the huge minority. Like, everybody loves this movie. It's made
Seven's
a ton of
still
movies.
A good score,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah.
Be an A.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's a long episode.
It was a long episode. Thank you for sticking with us if you're still here. We're excited
about the music that's to come next.
Yes, I'll see. Yes, that's right. I'll throw in another
movie
remix.
Movie reviews and banter.
Movie Wallace.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's very good.
I'm not using that voice in the song.
You're not going to use Movie Wallace.
Actually, I could throw that into AI. And see
oh my God, that would be hilarious.
No, please don't.
All right, team. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Sorry. Episode 552 was our original review of The Room Next Door.
And it was late 2024 when it was released. Yes. Watch The Room Next Door.
Yes.
It'll make you think about your own life.
Yes.
And what's important.
Okay.
Okay, shut
Goodbye.
Up. Shut up. Goodbye. Bye.
All right. So without further ado, I will spin up the band for our outro music. Thank you for listening. Until next time. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Plus a little general chat.